Alt NPR.
The following is an installment of Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, an audio archive, and a blog, visit toeradio.org.
They want me to join the Lampoon. So they come to me to try out for them, which I found very offensive. I had to submit things, and you get cut, and all this crap. Having just gotten into Harvard, I was extremely high on myself. So what I basically thought I would do is just recycle all the pieces from high school, so I wouldn't actually have to do anything. There was a joke at the time, which was, what's black and white and red and can't turn around in a phone booth? The answer was a nun with a javelin through her head. Which is not funny now, and I'm not sure it was funny then. But it inspired me. It inspired me, and my senior English project was a series of poems, and that was the theme, the nun with the javelin through her head. It was the theme of my poems. I wrote a sonnet. I wrote a ballad, an ode. I had a nice William Carlos Williams. I can't remember. Nothing as pretty as a... None. Robert Frost, which ended, my mount is taken with the red of none with javelin through head, and soon makes up for hours unfed, and soon makes up for hours unfed. The head of my high school in New York was a former priest, and my English teacher decided that I should read those poems to the auditorium at the graduation. But he had to pass them through the former priest. That didn't go forward. That did not go forward. But I took those poems with me to Harvard, and I submitted them to the Lampoon. And the people at the Lampoon, they used to come down to my dorm. Guys who knew me and who'd asked me to try out for the Lampoon would bring people to meet me for the nun poems. Very, very popular. But, I thought it was completely appropriate that people would want to meet me for the nun poems. I was a f***ing superstar back then. So I made it through all the things, and then they came the last night when the last cut had been decided. They came, three of them came with big expensive bottles of booze. They came to my dorm and they midnight, and they we had a nice party, and they all congratulated me. And then what happened after that, apparently at the Lampoon, after you make all the cuts and it's all final and they're only, the final eight, they have a little ceremony where they... And this is in the film Animal House was based on this, apparently. The scene, they show pictures, they show, a slide of the person, and then everyone throws beer at it and pretzels, and they all make noises. And when my picture came up, it's a ceremonial thing. And when my picture came up, the president of the Lampoon at the time, do you know who Conan O'Brien is? No. He's a piece of shit. Yeah, he stands up and he says, "This guy may be the next John Updike, but I don't like him, and I don't get him. And I say we vote him down." And he puts his thumb down in front of my picture and stands up with big thumbs down. And they elect not to ratify my joining of the Lampoon. So they came the next morning to take back all the booze. And I said, "Did you steal the booze? Is the booze not yours to give me?" And they said, "No, some terrible things happened. Can't really explain it, but Conan O'Brien rejected your admission to the Lampoon." I was very upset. Very upset. They were very embarrassed because they'd asked me to try out, and then they brought me the good news, and we'd had the negotiations, and then they had to bring me this terrible news. So they investigated it, and it was their theory that, and I'm sure, that there's a greater truth here, but their theory was that the strongest piece I had was the nun poems, and they felt that Conan O'Brien, who was a good Catholic at the time, liked to do his own nun jokes and didn't want some little scraggly little Jew from New York doing, you know, nun jokes on him. So that was the only, that, you know, whatever. That worked for me at the time. That made it a very biblical battle. Now, at the time, Conan O'Brien was 7 feet tall and 103 pounds. And he just kind of, he was just a wraith. He was a redheaded wraith, and he would flit all around the campus with that awkward body crap, shaking and doing all these, laughing at himself. I mean, he was a freak, but a powerful freak. I was a freshman. He used to host these mixers and things, and so I would see him a lot, and I just really, I hated him. I would stare at him, and my roommates would heckle him, and we just, oh God, we hated him. We hated him, and we mocked him. He was, although powerful, a laughable character back then because he was so odd, and he was always on his own, but he had the power. He had the keys. He had the keys to the kingdom, even then. I didn't realize what I realize now, which is that you get in the Lampoon and you're set for f***ing life. You go off to Hollywood, you score some babes, you have a mansion, you get $100 million a year, and you disappear into the sunset. I didn't realize that then. And I thought, it's just a funky little building and they're all naked, giving each other hand jobs. I don't need to be a part of that. So I was insulting. And what bothered me was the John Updike thing, because back then, to me, that was a huge insult. Because I was such a... you know, they had to beg me to try out. I was very arrogant. I'd given them my old, you know, pieces from my childhood, you know, the previous year. That's old stuff. And that was enough, and I only had to do one out of four pieces, and I still made it, and then some lunatic zapped me. I was still very, very, very high on myself, and the Updike comparison just f***ing made me just... made me really infuriated me. It was a very demeaning thing to be compared to John Updike. Then, my junior year, and I believe Conan's senior year, they had Harvard's 10 Funniest Wits and Pundits on the radio, and I was elected to that very, very auspicious group. And I went, and little did I know that Conan O'Brien would be one of the other 10. He brought his little flunkies to do little routines with him. You know, the rest of us were humble enough to know that we were, and not all our friends were voted, so we didn't bring, you know, our posses, because our posses weren't voted the 10 funniest wits and posses. So we came by ourselves. But Conan needed the support and his crack staff. He had little things, guys doing riffs, doing sound effects, people doing shoes. And I mean, I had some funny things to say, but I could not say them. The guy was 3 feet from me, and I just kept muttering, "You fucking, you fucking eat me, you piece of shit." And I go, "Why don't you come on?" And they turned off my microphone, but I was not aware of it. So I just muttered, and like they basically turned off my mic without telling me. And it was a girl I was trying to impress at the time, and I was done with the show. And my anger was controlled. I went into the dining hall and I saw her. I'm like, "Hey, good show, huh?" And she's like, "Oh, they turned off your mic 5 minutes into it. You were muttering obscenity." So that was the beginning, really. That was the second fuck I got from Conan. But I moved on. I grew out of it and went far and wide and ended up, you know, two blocks from Harvard. And then, I don't know, 10 years later, something like that, I'm listening to the news, and Letterman's moved ahead, and they need someone to fill the spot, and I hear this unknown writer, Saturday Night Live writer, has been to take the role, host, and I just knew it was coming. Conan O'Brien. I watched 5 minutes of the first show. He's such a talentless, awkward, stupid goof that, I mean, I actually enjoyed watching it for 5 minutes, and I thought, this is going to be canceled after, you know, half an episode. It's so pathetic that I actually, you know, I couldn't watch too much of it because he was on nationwide TV, but it was so humiliating. I thought it was marvelous. And then you'd hear occasionally, "Oh, I think he's okay. It's getting better." Then I start hearing, "Yes, he's $5 million a year for 10 years. He's dating some actress. He's dating some model." You see these people every once in a while. You see a guy who's so untalented, so this, and he's making, and he's everywhere, and you think, "What? What? Oh, okay, there is a devil, and there are deals to be made." 2 years ago, an acquaintance, someone who did not know this part of my past, wanted to hook me up with a woman here in Boston who was supposed to be, you know, just a wonderful, all a wonderful start to finish, everything. Great. So I began to communicate with her in an email. I think we had a phone call, and then we were going to get together. And the night we were going to meet, I get an email from her that says, "We really don't know that much about each other. I just want you to know three things about me and before we meet, and you can send me three things about you. And the three things about me are, number one, I don't remember what it was. Number two, I don't remember what it was. Number three, I just love Conan O'Brien. He's my favorite celebrity. If I were going to stalk anyone, it would be Conan O'Brien. I just, blah, 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 blah." God, you know, if it had been a joke, it would have been funny. But it was just so horrifying. I mean, he continues to torment me. And he's on every night. You can't escape. Every night before I go to sleep, before I say my prayers and go to bed, that sucker. I mean, there's nowhere to hide. In the civilized world, there's nowhere to hide. If this story were ever revealed to Conan, the first thing he would say is, "Who? What?" And probably for an hour, he'd think about it. You know, if someone paid him, $20 million an hour for his time, and tried to, tell him about this, he would say, "No, I don't know. I don't know." If maybe the nun poems thing might bring it back, and then he would say, "Oh, that guy sucked." This is my shining moment, recounting this to people all over the world and people in countries. People don't understand a word of what I'm saying. The only thing they understand from this whole story is Conan O'Brien, because they get him over there. So I'll say the whole story, and I'll say, and they go, "Oh, Conan O'Brien, oh, ho, ho," and then they think I think maybe I've met him or something, and they love me. It's just the whole backfiring is just extraordinary. It's, and I know it's happening, but I'm so pathetic that if I can get a drink from some guy because they understand the word Conan O'Brien, even if that's a tribute to Conan, I'll take it. There's no good ending. That's the tragedy here, is that I think you realize, and everyone realizes, that there is no happy ending. The happy ending is that some fool will listen to this somewhere and think, "Oh, I'm not so pathetic. That guy's much more pathetic than I am." Oh, that's the happy ending now. That's the happy ending, baby.
Listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, an audio archive, and a blog, visit toeradio.org.
Alt, alt, alt. Alt.